From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on.
In a god of a freedom, honey. Don't you know that I'm loving you? In a god of a freedom, baby. Don't you know that I'll always be true? Oh, won't you come with me? And I'll take my hand. Oh, won't you come with me? And I'll walk this land. Please take my hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. Got myself Stuart here, and I have got over in Colorado John Grace.
Yep, from the Rocky Mountains.
Rocky Mountains. Not a film lab processor, by the way.
Right.
All right, yeah. No window into the lives of others that you watch over and over on a projector, right?
Right, right.
No, that's good.
Does that line of employment still exist?
Oh, it did back in 86.
Yeah, I knew that, but it's like now I don't know if
anybody
bothers.
I'll get into that when we talk about the film that we're talking about this week, which is actually a bunch of things we're going to do together, all based around the one source. And that source we're talking about is not hot sauce. It's the novel Red Dragon by Thomas Harris.
Yes.
And what we're going to be doing is discussing the novel a little bit. We're going to be looking at the film Manhunter from 1986. Unfortunately, we're going to be looking at the pile of shit Red Dragon from 2002. And John, you're going to be talking a little bit about the Hannibal TV series, is that correct?
Yes, I managed to make it through two episodes, and I can offer a little opinion on that. What they did differently.
Very good. So anyway, we're back. We did take last week off, scheduling and blah, blah, blah. It was just horrible and nothing eventuated. And we did put a post up in the shitbook group saying that we were going to do a Jerry Lewis episode. That was going to be last week. Like I said, scheduling conflicts and, you know, availability was just terrible. So it never happened. As John and I were planning to do the episode for this week, it was going to be Jerry Lewis, but just me personally, I know you wanted to do it, but me personally, I was like, you know, the whole Jerry Lewis death thing has passed, and well, I like Jerry Lewis quite a bit. You know, I grew up watching his films. The corpse de Louise is a bit cold now, and I'm like, well, I think that ship has pretty much sailed. We may still do it, you know.
Well, I'd like to do something to counter the idea that all I saw in the obits was, oh, he directed The Day the Clown Cried and it was never released, as if that's the only thing he ever made.
Yeah.
Or failed to make. You know, this idea that he was this huge star in a comedy partnership with Dean Martin that would be worth like $1 billion in today's money.
Oh god! Yeah.
None of that seems to be on any of the obits. It's weird.
No, it's all about that clown movie, which really, I mean, there is footage of it out there on YouTube if you want to see. Not the whole film, obviously, but there's like about half an hour of it, and it's horrid. It's not very good at all.
He pulled the plug because it wasn't any good. It wasn't funny. He said so. He said it wasn't working, so he stopped it because it was terrible. So it's like, that's why. It's nothing. It's no secret to it or anything. Or he just said it wasn't funny.
If you do want to see a good Jerry Lewis clown movie, watch Hardly Working. That, well, that has him obviously as a clown at the start. We're not going to turn this into a Jerry Lewis episode, but I'm just saying that has him as a clown at the start, which is an obvious nod to this Day the Clown Cried. There's a lot of stuff, times that Jerry Lewis has been a clown, hardly working. He was a clown in Family Jewels as one of the uncles. So if you're, you know, that eager to see Jerry Lewis as a clown, watch Family Jewels or Hardly Working. There are too much better movies than what that unreleased clown film is. Anyway, so we were going to do the Jerry Lewis episode. Hasn't happened this week. May happen sometime very soon. I don't think we can leave it that long. But what happened was, not last week, the week before, I got sick with the flu that is ripping through this country. It's one of the worst I've seen in decades. And, of course, having a large family, my youngest son got it, and it filtered on through to everybody else, and I eventually got it one night. And I wound up spending 3 days off work, sick, unable to move, no appetite, no nothing. Didn't even want to watch movies. I just put a sport channel on and just left it. But there was one period there in that 3 days where I thought, I need to see a movie. I'm just sick of watching sport. So I went out to the garage, hobbled out to the garage with about 10 blankets around me and saw Manhunter on the shelf. I'm like, huh, I haven't seen this in a number of years. I'd like to see this again. So I put it on, and the version I watched was actually a fan edit of Manhunter. Just real quick, for those of you who don't know, Manhunter, the Michael Mann film from 1986, has had a bit of revisionism done to it on its various versions that have been released on home video over the years. What this person has done, this person who calls himself Leone Nutt, obviously a big Sergio Leone fan, has cobbled together all the available footage from all the releases, and it's basically everything that's out there put into the film. So instead of the film running 2 hours, it now runs 2 hours and 11 minutes. So I put this on, and like I said, I hadn't seen it for a number of years, and watched it and was blown away by it. Like, really blown away by how good it was still after 30-something years of being out. I managed to get back to work a couple of days later. I couldn't manage to shake Manhunter. I just couldn't get my mind off that film. And it just lingered with me. And when it came time to you and I doing an episode this week, I'm like, what about Manhunter? And you were like, yeah, I just saw the film last year or something, was it, you said?
Yeah. I had a DVD of it, MGM DVD, that I found at Big Lots for like $2 for international listeners. It's a discount store here in the States. And I watched it, and made an impression. I hadn't watched it probably since 1986 or 87 when it was out on videotape.
Okay. So you've had quite a few years between drinks with that one. All right.
Yes.
But anyway, so we decided on Manhunter, and then I'm like, that's right, I've got Red Dragon in the garage, in the which I managed to pick up for $3 in the great 2007, holy shit, HD DVD is dead. Let's get these out in the fire sale real quick. So I've got my HD DVD of Red Dragon, and as I told you, I'll pop it in and hopefully it'll work. And it did work. So we said that I'd watch Red Dragon, and I also started reading, after I'd watched Manhunter, I started reading the novel Red Dragon by Thomas Harris, which I have got on the shelf out in the garage as well, my bookshelf.
Had you read it before? Had you read it years ago?
I had read it when I first bought it back in 2003. Mm-hmm. I didn't own the novel before that. I bought it because the novel that I've got has got Anthony Hopkins on the front. So it's obviously done as a tie-in with the film. But it's still the original Harris novel. So I had not read it for about, 13, 14 years? And started reading again. I'm a third of the way through. And I'll bring it up as we come along. So that's how we managed to get from what would have been a Jerry Lewis episode into doing Red Dragon, Manhunter. Now, you said you'd read Red Dragon before, right?
Yeah, I read it in 1987, actually, around the time Manhunter I think right before it was coming out. Actually, I read it in 86. I read it in 86 because the theatrical release of Manhunter was a massive bomb. Like, it was gone in a week. It played a week, jeez, and it was gone. And one reason was the title Manhunter. I think they should have used the Red Dragon title because the novel was a huge bestseller. It was like on a Jaws and Godfather level in the early 80s. You'd see that novel everywhere. And by changing that title, that already was pretty stupid. The ads were not very effective, and it disappeared. And when they reissued it, a paperback under the title Manhunter, for some reason, to tie it in with the movie that had just bombed. And the bookseller had actually told my father, he was buying it because he wanted to read it again. And the bookseller said, yeah, there was that movie that was gone here from like a week. Like, it played a week and it disappeared, and nobody saw it. So he bought it, and he remembered Red Dragon well enough from reading it in 82 or 81, whenever it came out. And so I read it after he did, and I was really impressed. And so when I saw the movie, I think the video release was probably that spring or winter. I really dug it. So, you know, it was a solid read. And the movie does things differently, but I still liked it quite a bit. Or yep. Like both sources.
Yep. And that's the thing as well with I had not seen Red Dragon. And look, we're gonna flip-flop between the two films. It's not going to be linear at all. It's all based on a lot of comparison stuff here. I had seen Red Dragon back in 2002, which is, like, while I didn't like it then, I liked the story, so I bought the book. But the film Red Dragon actually has some parts from the book that are not in Manhunter, and Manhunter has some things in the film that are not in the film Red Dragon. So they're still the same film, but they're still different as well. Okay, have you ever seen Red Dragon?
I have never seen it. For whatever reason, I couldn't bring myself to see it when it was out, when I heard they were casting Hopkins, and I think they were de-aging him with CGI or something to look like the younger Lecter, and it just, the whole thing sounded pretty bad. And I think I talked to Garrow, who had seen it in a theater, and said Ed Norton is so awful in the movie. It was like, he said it was unbelievable, like the level of bad acting. And I just skipped it. And Brett Ratner is not a favorite director of mine, and it's shocking to hear, but I was just like, why would I want to see these hacks, like, you know, destroy? The Man movie is fine, and you can do a remake and work from elements of the book and probably make a very good new adaptation of Red Dragon, but that was not the crew that I would hire to do it if I were a studio head.
No. And the thing is, as well, it's actually shot by the same guy who did Manhunter. Dante Spinotti.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So
he's in that very unique field of people who've done the same film twice.
Right.
Or shot the same film twice. Jeez. But boy, the film Red Dragon is just rungs on the ladder lower than Manhunter is. It's strikingly bad. It's just, so we'll look at the character of Will Graham for a start. The main character in the film. People tend to think that Hannibal Lecter is the main character of Red Dragon. He's not. He is an element in the book, but he's nothing like he is. His prominence is not as much as it is in Silence of the Lambs or Hannibal. Not even close to it. Right. If you watch Red Dragon, there's a lot of Hannibal Lecter in there. And if you read the book, there's not so much. So there were some things fabricated for the film that's not in the book that I absolutely did not like. Lecter demanding a dinner in his prison cell is complete crap. Not in there. Going by the timeline of the book, Lecter is captured by Will Graham in 1975. In the movie Red Dragon, they put 1980. I don't know why. But the thing is, as well, with the Red Dragon disc, it's got on there this heavily extensive FBI profile on Lecter and his movements and his birth date and all his movements up until the current day of 2002, whatever it was. Yep. Even there it says on that he was captured in 1975, yet Ratner puts a massive title card on the front of it, 1980.
It's because Ratner never read the novel.
He probably never read the novel, but the screenplay was written by the guy, Ted Talley, who did Silence of the Lambs. He's obviously read the book.
Yeah. Right.
So, and there's also a scene at the start. They've, like I said, they've tacked in a lot of Lecter in this, and that doesn't need to be the case, because with Manhunter, as you remember, we don't have Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter. We have Brian Cox.
Brian Cox. And without shadowy editing and horror movie music and atmosphere.
And
he's just there.
And as far as I'm concerned, the best Lecter.
Yes, way more effective.
Way more effective than Hopkins. Hopkins, even when I saw Silence of the Lambs back in 92, 91, whatever it was, 92, I'm like, I'm not buying this guy who talks like this, Claudius. Nobody talks like that.
Right.
You know, even James the most scholarly of gentlemen doesn't
speak like that. It's James Bond villain shit.
It's worse than that. Something, you know? Yeah, if you had a Bond villain to spoke like that, you'd be like, no way, I'm not buying this for a second. But with Brian Cox's performance as Lecter, he has a British accent, because he's a Scottish actor, but obviously a British accent in the film. And Lecter's British anyway. But he's subtle, yet effective. And you totally buy him. I can't buy Anthony Hopkins as Lecter. I just have a real struggle with it. And he became more and more cartoonish as the films went along. By the time you got to Hannibal in, what was that, 98 or something like that? 2000?
Yeah. 2000, I think.
Okay, something like that. His involvement was so much that it was a tough watch. That movie's just terrible.
Oh, it's awful. And I actually had arguments with people that liked it. I was like, it's ghastly. And I remember the best review was, of all things, the Howard Stern Show, where he said the only thing he was thinking while he was watching it, could Hannibal beat up Batman? Because they portray him as this super dangerous, you know, physically agile super assassin or something. It's pretty lame.
Yeah. So, my preference as a Lecter, and I really wish they had to put him in the Silence of the Lambs, was Brian Cox. I don't know if he was approached, or I don't think he had the star power like Anthony Hopkins had.
No, not then. He didn't have the rep.
No.
So,
but now, comparing casts between Manhunter and Red Dragon. Well, first of all, you got your director. You got Michael Mann, who did Manhunter, who is a master. And you got Brett Ratner, who is probably one of the biggest hacks in Hollywood. He's just horrible.
Absolute hack. Gun for hire.
Yeah.
That's all he is.
Cap for hire. That's all he is.
Yeah.
Every damn filmmaker these days has to have a cap. Like they're a big shot. It is. They all wear caps, and they've all got Sony headphones, you know, around their neck. Like,
that's pretty much it.
Yeah, pretty much. So you got that. And boy, when you watch Manhunter up against Red Dragon, it shows. Because I watched Manhunter again this morning after I dropped the kids off at school. I'm like, okay, I know I saw it last week, but I need to see it again. Especially after watching Red Dragon two nights ago. And Ed Norton in Red Dragon as Will Graham is just terrible. He is just sleepwalking through the whole film, John. He's just... If Garrow said he was that bad, times it by 10, he was worse than that. Just... I can't buy into it. You've got Harvey Keitel, who played Graham's former boss, Jack Crawford. Terrible in the film. Compared to Dennis Farina in Manhunter, who was great in the film.
Yeah.
William Peterson, obviously, as Will Graham in Manhunter, was great. And that's the difference between William Peterson's acting and Ed Norton's. As you know from Manhunter, Peterson, and especially Will Graham, really dive into trying to catch Dolarhyde, the Tooth Fairy.
Right.
And you just see this descent of this guy who's just shutting out reality, and you know, his wife and his son are slipping away from him because he's just so immersed in trying to catch the Tooth Fairy. In Red Dragon, it's nothing. The wife and son may as well not even be in there. They're an afterthought. They're in there for a few seconds, here and there, until we get to that ridiculous tacked-on ending that is not in the book. And it's I'll get into it later. If I feel like it, I don't know.
Also, so Peterson's a more expressive actor than Ed Norton. Ed Norton is very much into playing Ed Norton, and when he tries to act, he just comes off inept. Like if he's playing characters that are probably much like himself, no big deal. But when there was a movie, that heist film he did with De Niro.
Oh, The Score?
Yeah, and I thought he was so bad in it because he was like playing a retarded character, and it was just such a bad piece of acting. And you know he probably put it in there because he wanted to show his acting skills or something. It was just so bad. Yeah. And it's like he can't play anything other than scrawny, little, gushy, suburban white guy. That's all he can play. You know, he has no other ability. And he was fine in Fight Club because he was born for that role. But otherwise, if he tries to go beyond that, he's just out of his league.
Yep. Also, the problem I got with Red Dragon is one of the main characters is Francis Dolehide, played by Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah, it's odd casting.
Terrible. Just because in the book, Dolehide is described as an average to, say, below average looking guy with a hair lip.
Yeah.
No homo. Ralph Fiennes is kind of a good looking guy. You know, women kind of like him.
He almost played Bond before Brosnan.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
they tried. They approached him.
Yeah,
and he told them he wanted to do it serious, like Timothy Dalton. So they said, "Okay, well, we're going with a different approach." So
yeah,
they went back to Brosnan.
So there you go. So you've really got a James Bond playing this guy who's supposed to be disfigured and self-loathing. You look at Tom Noonan in Manhunter; you totally buy him as Dolehide.
Yeah,
he's this tall, 6'7" guy, balding. Not particularly good looking, you know. Just fits the part, and Noonan's approach to it was just way better than Ralph Fiennes. Ralph Fiennes was just living on the fact, or playing the part in the fact that he's got a massive tattoo all over his body of the Red Dragon, which is not even in the book from memory. Like I said, I'm only a third of the way into it.
I don't recall it in the book.
I don't either.
I mean, it's been decades since I read the book, but I don't recall it.
No, neither do I. Whereas Dolehide is just this tall guy who just can't look at himself, and you know, he's always covering his mouth to cover his hair lip, and that goes back to a subplot in the book of him being raised by his grandmother, who's very abusive and also somewhat incestuous. That's why he has problems with women of the opposite sex, and it is brought up throughout Manhunter in various parts. But this is what I'm getting at. The casting of these two films is so far apart, and yet they had that much more money with Red Dragon to do it right, and they completely messed it up. Now, we'll get back to the films soon. What have you seen of Hannibal, the TV series, so far?
I watched the first two episodes where it's covering the Red Dragon novel, and there might be hints of it in prior episodes. I have not watched the series. I don't have time for TV shows like I used to, so it's just like, you know. I'd rather watch a movie or read a book or watch an old TV show that has a self-contained story in 30 minutes to an hour. I watched two episodes, and what they do is, as you know, Hannibal is played by that actor. He's not British. I forget his name. Mads Mikkelsen or whatever his name is, the villain from Casino Royale. And he plays Hannibal, I guess, as a Dutchman or something. It's strange. And mm-hmm. And he's also too youthful, and I think, again, no homo, handsome to play Hannibal Lecter. I figure him as an old man or a middle-aged guy, more like Brian Cox. Dolehide is like a youthful, handsome yoga-type guy doing like pull-ups and CrossFit-style exercises and power yoga. And he's got the Red Dragon tattoo, which I guess is, we now know, is coming more from the movies than the novel, although we'll probably be corrected on that. Maybe it is in the novel. And I just
it could
remember.
Be, yeah. Yeah. I'm yet to finish
like
it.
Said, I just vague memory of that, you know, if that's in the novel, I'd be surprised. He's youthful and handsome, and he's played by a British actor, and it's just not Dolehide the way I picture him. They appear to be doing the family movie gimmick, that is how he selects his victims, and which doesn't make much sense because I can't tell if the show is – I don't think it's set in the 80s. The other weird thing is it's filmed in Canada, so a lot of the settings, like where Will Graham lives, it's like in the snow, like in these mountain
– Oh, God.
Like they're in this – he and his family are in this mountain cabin and stuff, probably because it's just more convenient to film.
That's the complete opposite of Manhunter, where he's out in Florida.
Exactly, and it's just – it's a strange – like Will Graham is played by this actor who's thin and youthful and looks like a male model. It's just
so he doesn't look beaten up. He doesn't look beaten up by life like William Peterson
not at
does.
All. He looks like he's ready to climb a mountain and get on the cover of a magazine and court supermodels. The one thing they did that I thought was pretty effective in the first episode of covering the novel is they visualize his mental reenactments of Dolarhyde's crimes when he's in the house and stuff. And yep. It's pretty frightening. And it's funny because I don't think they would have been able to get away with this in the Manhunter version. And they wouldn't have done it anyway, but that's not how man works. But also they do like a kind of bullet time style photography to illustrate it. And it's so graphic, it probably would have gotten an X rating for Manhunter in 1986, and here it is on NBC television. You know, they're completely visualizing the murders and everything. It's a bit much, but I didn't think it was particularly necessary, but I understand that they're having to do it a bit differently since I don't even think they have the rights to all the characters from the Thomas Harris novels to do the TV show, but they obviously had the rights to the novel again. And
oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. They had the rights to the novel. They wanted to do Silence of the Lambs if they had a fourth season, but they didn't have the rights to Clara Starling because that's owned by whichever studio produced the Hannibal
movie. MGM, wasn't it?
MGM, and I don't think they produced the TV series or something about the set of producers, which is funny because it has De Laurentiis involvement. But the two episodes I've watched, I can't say I really want to continue. I think the show's really unpleasant. It's super bloody. I know that's what horror fans are looking for. Mm. I don't particularly consider this something that should... Even the novels, I don't think, should pander to a horror audience. You know, it's a totally different, you know, the type of people who are watching Dario Argento movies and stuff. I know it's more of a, I don't know, Brian De Palma mainstream Jaws type of thing or Exorcist, you know, Friedkin. You know, I'm not thinking it. This seems to put it more like, okay, all these actors could be at the next horror convention with the Walking Dead guys signing autographs for $100. That's the way I get the vibe of the show. And I mean, I'm told the show is fantastic and everything, and but it's to me, it's very slow because it's television. Television moves extremely slow these days, and because you know they're getting the most mileage they can out of that novel. So, and I think it goes on for 5 episodes. So it's like I said, there's no way I could sit through all these episodes before we record because I'm not super enthralled with this.
There's no reason why you couldn't do season 1 Red Dragon, season 2 Silence of the Lambs, and you do say 12 one hour episodes, and you'll maximize as much you possibly can out of those books.
Yeah, and that's what they're doing with season 3 of Hannibal. That's where the Red Dragon story is. And I'm guessing that the previous seasons work from... I think he wrote a prequel novel after Hannibal, like Hannibal Rising.
Hannibal Rising, yeah, I've not got that one.
Yeah, they work out of details of that. I think they work out of material. It's funny because I think they've created some fake stand-in characters for Clarice if they decide to do Silence of the Lambs and some of the other characters. They've done some stand-ins in case they can't get the rights, but you know, from what I heard, they're not getting a fourth season, so you know, it's all for naught.
Yeah, they messed up. Should have done the 3 books: Red Dragon, Lambs, Hannibal.
Yeah,
3 seasons. You could have easily done it, but oh well, not to be. It looks like another opportunity wasted there, I guess. But okay, now, what were your thoughts on Manhunter and its... I mean, I really like Manhunter a lot, but that soundtrack, that 80s soundtrack for a film like this, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, it's...
With the soundtrack or the movie itself?
Well, not the movie. Obviously, the movie's fantastic, but the rock soundtrack for a film like that just screams a Michael Mann wanting a hit. Record, you know, to tie in with the film.
Well, he was very into that aesthetic because of Miami Vice. And
oh, sure.
He created the idea of the MTV cop drama and or MTV, and I guess he was making an MTV suspense thriller.
Oh, for
and,
sure.
And that music, a lot of those songs are just weird, and that synth music is I don't know. It just, I don't love it. I'm not going to buy the soundtrack album. I like.
I had got it.
At the end, I thought that was always a fun touch because the ending is different from the novel. But
yes.
Like that was total Michael Mann's creation. That whole Inagata DeVita playing at full blast. While
it's fucking awesome though, isn't it?
It's great, and yeah. It's so weird. And he did some interesting stuff with jump cuts and like the photography that nobody's really done since that. It's bizarre looking, but interesting. You know. It's the soundtrack. It's funny. Even then, I thought the soundtrack was. It was a kid. I thought the soundtrack was going to age the film.
Because oh, it
I
does.
Know nobody's going to be listening to this type of music in 5 years, and you know this movie's not going to age very well. But it actually has. I think people dig it anyway. Aside from the, you know, synth music and MTV designed pop. Is it really pop tunes, or is it more like art rock tunes or something?
Art rock, yeah. It's not pop. It's not like you're hearing, you know, "Walking on Sunshine" by Katrina and the Waves in there. It's obviously not that, but it's yeah, it's more like an art rock sort of thingy. But you know, when you see Dollar High towards the end, and he's outside that blind woman's house, Reba, he's at her house, and he thinks he's seeing her and her coworker kissing, but they're not, and yeah. It's got that "Strong as I Am" song, and I'm like. Really?
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, it's about one spoonful of shit too much in my mouth that I don't need.
Yeah,
and
it sounds like a Supertramp outtake or something.
Oh, yeah, it does. Like I said, it feels like an MTV film for sure, this one. And, yeah. You know, that, as you said, that's Michael Mann with his Miami Vice. And even Crime Story as well feels very MTV-ish, if you remember that series.
Set in the early 60s, yet for whatever reason, George Thorogood is on the soundtrack.
Yeah,
has that 80s neon vibe because he had to move it to Vegas because, you know, he wanted neon in that show so bad.
Oh, good, yeah.
And
sure.
I love that show when I was a kid.
Oh, it's fantastic. It still holds up quite well.
Yeah, and I rewatched a good deal of it a few years ago when the DVD set came out, I think with all the music missing. But I thought it held up pretty fine. I was like, although compared to today, it's funny. Back then, if you were going after the same criminal for like two seasons, that seemed like, oh, they're inept or whatever. But now with today, it takes five seasons to stop one criminal.
Yep.
So Crime Story seems like a fast-paced show compared to that nonsense. But
it is.
Plus, it gave us Dice and a small role for Vincent Gallo. So there's a lot of... our cult icons kind of tie in with that show.
And a few holdovers from Manhunter in there as well. Dennis Farina, yes. Obviously. Stephen Lang, who played Freddie Lowndes in the film, was in there. And I don't even know if William Peterson turned up in an episode. I can't remember.
I don't believe so. He was supposed to get a huge boost from being in Manhunter and To Live and Die in L.A. at the same time. And it ended up backfiring and because both movies flopped. So I don't think he led a... major studio release for years. Like, you know, CSI, you know, he was only cast in CSI really because of Manhunter, I think. And that ended up kind of making his career, but you know, for years he was just kind of like you'd see him pop up as a supporting actor or whatever.
Yeah, Young Guns 2. I remember him being
right,
in that one.
The media was totally in support of him because I remember Rolling Stone picked him as Hot Actor of the Year in 1986 was William Peterson, and it was all because To Live and Die in L.A. and Manhunter were expected to be these huge hits, and they weren't. Both were bombs.
Both so cult hits now,
I mean,
though.
Look at but yeah, now they're the movies that get re-released on Blu-ray, while the hits from the back in the day, yeah, you can barely find them on home video.
Yeah. Another bad acting, or another bad casting choice, I should say, in Red Dragon, apart from everybody else, is Philip Seymour Hoffman. An actor I usually like, but he's playing the Freddie Lowndes character, who was played by Stephen Lang in Manhunter. And, my God, he's absolutely horrible in this film. When you see Freddie Lowndes captured by Dolehide and shoved into that wheelchair and made to read out that note that Dolehide's written for him before he sets him on fire. Not much of a spoiler, you know.
Yeah.
you believe Stephen Lang is really scared. With Seymour Hoffman, he looks like he's on the junk at the time. probably was. And I'm sorry, I don't need to see Philip Seymour Hoffman's big, dirty Sasquatch feet on the big screen while I'm eating my chicken sandwich. Fuck that. Okay, really turn me off my food that I was really looking forward to. He's just pathetic in this film.
Do you get the vibe that Brett Ratner is not an actor's director?
Oh, has no clue. I picked up on that a little bit. Yeah,
get away with too much mugging and bullshit. You know, he can't control his actors.
He can't. Well, look at Edward Norton for a start. As I said before, you see William Peterson, you see this actor spiral into his obsession with the two families killed, and now the third one that Dollar hides after. With Edward Norton, it's just, yeah. Oh my God, he puts mirrors on their eyes so he can see what he can see himself like a god. It's like, it's almost like someone that had a earpiece in Norton's ear and said, "This is a line here." He puts the mirrors on their eyes, and he repeats it.
They probably did. I'm hearing that's really the case for a lot of these assholes.
Oh boy,
like Johnny Depp, I think. Now has the earpiece in his ear to feed him lines. They don't want to fucking do the work of memorizing the script and acting out the scenes beforehand and practicing. Yeah.
But Ratner's just terrible. Just terrible. I mean, I was so disappointed. I wanted to like this time around. I thought maybe it might have been me the first time. Soon as I was 5 minutes into this, I'm like, my heart sank. I'm like, I don't like the opening shot of Anthony Hopkins at the opera. Oh, no, sorry, watching the Philharmonic. One of the musicians on stage plays a bum note. Anthony Hopkins kills him and feeds him to the rest of the cast when they're having dinner at Hopkins at Lecter's house. I'm sorry, that's not in the book. Not that I know of anyway. And if it is,
that doesn't even sound like a Hannibal Lecter thing.
No, it really doesn't.
That's like some Hitler Nazi nightmare fantasy. You know?
Yeah.
Play the rock tune playing Wagner and Hitler had him, fed to Hermann Göring or something. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. There is one thing that Red Dragon does better than Manhunter, believe it or not. It's a small, minute thing, but it is important. For those of you who don't know the book, as I said earlier, Will Graham captures Lecter in 75 after sitting in his office talking with him about the case that Lecter is the killer, yet Graham doesn't know it at the time. Until Lecter walks away, Graham sees a book on his shelf and connects the dots that it's Lecter. By the time he's turned around, Lecter has stabbed Graham in the stomach. Fairly deep and put a massive scar on him. When you see William Peterson as Graham in Manhunter, he doesn't have the scar. Yet it's spoken about. In Red Dragon, you see it. So that is one detail I got right. Another problem I had with Red Dragon was every house in there seems to feel like it's the Sistine Chapel. It's just every house is enormous. And that's the problem. Silence of the Lambs was not filmed that way. Silence of the Lambs was filmed very tight, and it felt very confined and restrictive. Red Dragon was filmed like every house is a mansion, and it's got 27 bedrooms and a living room the size of Melbourne. Excuse my
because Red Dragon is made by rich assholes in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And they think everybody lives like that.
That's right. Yet Manhunter, as done by Michael Mann, was done right. Dollarhide's house is not this massive mansion like it is in Red Dragon. It's this small place with artifacts around it. That's all. Nothing out of the ordinary. It's just a general house. Like I said, Red Dragon, Dollarhide's house is way off the beaten path, and it's enormous. The house that Graham lives in is enormous. And compared to Manhunter, the place that Graham lives in is just like a little beachside property. That's all. Nothing fancy. Yeah. So that's where they messed up, because if I remember the film Hannibal right, every damn scene in that film was like it was shot in a mansion or a chapel.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the aesthetic, what the look was they were going for with Red Dragon. It just...
Mm-hmm. Brett Ratner was just going for whatever he was told to do.
Yeah.
Probably just took suggestions from the crew and, you know, who knows? I don't think he read the novel. I don't think he has any clue.
No.
You know, probably had no clue what he was doing. I mean, he's just... And obviously he let the actors ham up everything, so that's him. You know, he's an actor, or he's a director that actors can walk all over, and it doesn't matter, because you got to start with Chris Tucker movies, and Chris Tucker just doesn't learn lines and improvises and just acts really loud and obnoxious, and that's the movie. And they make plenty of money, so for some reason they thought it was worthwhile to let Brett Ratner direct, you know, movies that deserve real filmmakers. But, you know, he's the young name. He's had hits. That's how they go by things.
Well, the thing is, any other real filmmaker would have seen Edward Norton, even in rehearsals or screen tests, and said, nah, wrong person. Yep. Just doesn't suit it. I mean, who would you put in there? I don't know. You know, it's off the top of my head, I can't think who I would have put in there, but there's better actors out there. Philip Seymour Hoffman does not look like a journalist. He looks like a junk dealer, really, like a drug dealer. No, he does. He looks strung the fuck out in this film.
Right.
Of
actors back then, gosh, I don't even know who I'd cast as Will Graham at that time. You know, it certainly wouldn't be George Clooney, and he seemed to be getting whatever the hell he wanted. And, you know, I don't think I'd go for Val Kilmer either, because it's scene chewer, you know.
That didn't look as beaten down as William Peterson did.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, actors don't look like that anymore, though.
No, they don't. I mean, if that would do it these days, I'd probably stick Ryan Reynolds in there as Will Graham. Like, nah.
Oh, God.
Or,
it'd be so excruciating.
No, no, sorry. No, Idris Elba. We're going to have a... After he's finished playing James Bond, he can go play Will Graham.
Yeah.
They won't cast him as Dolla Hyde because he will, you know. Yeah.
Well, hopefully the Dark Tower flopping will end all Idris Elba should play everybody talk.
One can hope. One can only hope. Yeah.
Lots of duds lately, so.
Yeah, really.
The business needs to change. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Just quickly, what were your thoughts on Silence of the Lambs? Did you enjoy that one?
I liked it.
You ever read it?
I read the book a couple of years before. I read the book when it came out, and simply because I loved Red Dragon. I've never read Black Sunday, though. Isn't that interesting?
No.
Then when the movie came out, I saw it like opening weekend and enjoyed it. I didn't think it was the greatest film ever made, but I thought it was pretty good. And watched it again on home video and with a girlfriend at the time, and still liked it. And but I never thought it was like the greatest thriller ever made or anything. I was surprised it swept the Oscars.
I was going to say, what were your thoughts about its Oscar wins?
I thought it was a really solid horror suspense movie, whatever. And it's like, I thought Anthony Hopkins was a bit overpraised as Lecter. And as always happens when people, you know, start quoting a movie that's very recent, you know, you kind of hit a problem when you have people, you know, making joke quotes of Hannibal Lecter's stuff in the movie. So it was like, well, I wish it was Brian Cox and directed by either Michael Mann or one of his underlings instead of the B-movie Peter Lorre underlighting that Jonathan Demme gave him.
Yep, yeah. In the end, what would you give Manhunter out of 10?
I'd give it like a 7.5.
Right.
And with me, that's a high rating. And even back then, that's probably what I would have given it. It was like a 3-star movie. I used the Leonard Maltin star system back then. But I think it's a solid... Not everything works, but a lot does. And it's an effective adaptation of the novel, even though it takes a different approach. Whereas in the novel, you got a lot of Francis Dolehide's point of view. You don't really get it in the movie that much. You get pretty much it's a Will Graham show. And I understood why they did that, and I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't have a problem with the changes they made in the narrative. It's just a soundtrack, and So a few missteps there, but otherwise, I think, yeah, the fashion and the music dates it a bit. I would have rather maybe a raw, purer to the novel adaptation for 1986 would have worked better for me. But I think for what it is, it's very good and it's totally worth seeing. And I think in some aspects, when I watched it last year, I said, you know, I think I kind of like this more than Silence of the Lambs.
So oh, I do.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just like something about it holds up better. And also because it was so ignored at the time, it just feels like it might be Michael Mann's best movie. Like, I'm not a huge Michael Mann fan, but I think this is actually one of his better movies.
I would say that, but I need to go back and watch Thief again. I have not seen it for a number of years.
Yeah, Thief is arguably his best film, but Thief is pretty terrific from what I recall.
What about The Keep?
Keep, boy, I didn't understand that at all when I watched it. So
yeah,
I know there's efforts to restore it to some sort of better director's cut.
He won't touch it.
He just doesn't care. So
no. No, I've heard numerous times that it was coming out in Laserdisc, DVD after its Laserdisc release. Never happened. The man was saying it back in 2001, yeah, I'm finally going to do a commentary for The Keep, and it's going to come out in a special edition. Never came out, and so I don't know if he got cold feet or he was like, yeah, I was going to do it, but you know, now I can't be bothered or...
Well, it's probably some bad feelings there. It was a troubled shoot. I think their special effects died like a day after shooting began or something. It was like some weird tragedy, and I think that plagued the shoot. I think they had a lot of problems, and I believe the studio didn't even understand the film. So it was just then studios had a bit more power in Final Cut and everything, so the thing was probably just a disaster.
I remember seeing that.
It barely released when it came out. Barely released.
It got a Laserdisc release back in the 90s in widescreen. I saw it in a store once, John, for $4. I didn't bother with it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, now. It goes for a few bucks more than that. It's one of those sought-after ones because it's so hard to find on home video. Because it's never had a release since then. For me, I'm going to give Manhunter 8.5 out of 10. I really enjoyed it. Now, but like I said earlier on, I watched the fan edit with all the footage inserted into it. There's a theatrical cut and a director's cut out on Blu-ray. They're together on the one release. Which one did you watch with what ending?
I watched the studio cut, which ends with him at the beach house with his family and some...
Okay.
TV music plays.
Have you ever seen the director's cut ending?
Nope.
Okay, so you've never seen him... Because you know how there's that third family that Dollar hides after who's going to kill, and they've got the home videos of him. There's the end scene of the director's cut where Graham is all slashed up from Dollar hide on his face and cuts and bruises everywhere. Goes to that family's house... They know him by name via Jack Crawford, who informed them that he was the one who killed... Will Graham was the one who killed Dolahide, who was after them. And he just stares at him with this really bizarre, blank look, just going, I just wanted to see you. It's creepy to watch.
Because it's so weird.
What it does, it tells you that Graham has now gone so far down the path of... obsessing over Dolahide, Tooth Fairy, that he's now absorbed that mindset of the killer. So you don't know if he's going to kill them next. I mean, it's not in the book. Yeah, I know. It's man embellishing, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fucking great ending, don't get me wrong. But, it's got the two endings on there. If you listen to the show, if you're not buying the Blu-ray of it, which one's better? I want to say the theatrical, because I think that Graham went through so much shit and nearly lost his family that to get them back and finally get out of the FBI again and retire again and live the life that he's living with his wife and son is the more satisfying ending. But Yeah, director's ending is it's creepy as fuck. That's for sure.
Yeah, but it strikes me as man trying to fuck with the audience like this, like a 70s director. You know, so many movies would end with the end, question mark.
Yeah.
Because they have a dark ending, and it's just kind of dumb. Because the whole Red Dragon, the novel, is based on Thomas Harris's interviews with John Douglas, the FBI profiler.
He's on that Red Dragon disc, yeah. A little special featurette.
Participates on it and everything. And at the time, Dolarhyde was based on what was known about the BTK killer, who was not caught at the time. Still,
oh,
large.
Really? I didn't know.
Yes, it was based on the Biden torture kill. It was Dennis, whatever his name was. He was finally caught in 2004, 2005, because his dumbass decided to write letters to the newspaper, like, glad you remembered me, or something like that. And of course, the police tracked him down and arrested him. And
yep.
Turns out he'd been an alarm installer and had a family with kids and everything. And he was a pretty awful serial killer and terrorized Wichita, Kansas for decades.
Shit.
And it was based on the first couple of his first murders was an entire family. And that was, I think, his largest, most disturbing murders was he killed this large family and their kids and jerked off the scene and all that crap. And that's what inspired the Dolarhyde thing. And John Douglas had gone through, the whole what you see Will Graham doing with the whole being at, they had a mock up of that house, the Oteros, I think that was their name.
Yeah.
And a mock up of their house and dummies to represent the bodies and everything. The FBI had built this at a lab in Kansas City or something, and he did the whole Will Graham thing, going through it and trying to figure this guy out. And that is, I think, what he told Thomas Harris about, and that's what inspired the writing of Red Dragon.
Nice.
So he was based on a serial killer who was not caught at the time. So kind of like Dirty Harry, supposedly, they say Scorpio is based on the Zodiac.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and who's never been caught, so,
But if we wait about 10 minutes, there'll be another book with the My Daddy Was a Zodiac Killer.
Right, right. Yeah. Luckily, we don't have to worry about My Dad Was BTK, because we know who that is.
That's right, yeah.
That publishing scam that's going on, so.
Yeah, but there's money in them, there are Zodiac Kills, John.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought publishers had lawyers that didn't allow that type of crap to be published, but I don't think it matters now. Like, I read a Lindbergh kidnapping book that claimed Charles Lindbergh set up the kidnapping and murder of his own son. I mean, it's just like, it's based on the most, what would be the word, tenuous or vague of circumstances to try to tie some conspiracy. It's just crazy stuff. And this is published by a major publisher, like St. Martin's Press.
Jeez.
They don't care. They just don't give shit. It's just like, as long as we get the sales at the drugstores and the true crime shelves, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter if the book is truthful or not.
Yeah. Another thing I need to bring up before we finish up in the casting in Red Dragon is Emily Watson as Reba McLean, the blind co-worker who has a thing for Francis Dolarhyde. In Manhunter, it's played by Joan Allen, and really well as well, I must add.
Yeah.
In Red Dragon, it's played by Emily Watson, whose eyes are so wide open, trying to, portray this blind woman, that she looks like a possessed doll.
And again, that sounds like Brett Ratner, not in charge of the actors.
No.
Just letting them go way too far. Any cartoonish exaggerations, it just doesn't work.
Like, if you look at somebody who's blind, their eyes are either always halfway shut. I'm not having a go at them. Obviously, of course I'm not doing that, but I'm talking about their physical appearance. Nobody keeps their eyes as wide open as Emily Watson's. It's insane.
No, I think that would be uncomfortable for blind people.
Of course you would.
It's just like we have a lot of blind people here in the Denver area because we have some blind schools.
Right.
And you see them all the time, and the eyes are half open.
Yeah.
It's like that's how they walk. You know, they walk around with canes and stuff, and
their
eyes are half open. They're not eyes wide open while crossing the street and stuff. I just never seen it.
Yeah.
It's just they don't have their eyes rolled in the back of their head like Zatoichi the Blind Swordsman. It's like it's you know, it's just normal. It's just like, but it's funny because I don't think a director like Brett Ratner would even appreciate the use of subtlety in a movie. He doesn't make subtle films, and you need a director who is skilled in subtlety to cover a novel like Red Dragon.
I honestly think during the making of Red Dragon that Ratner just lost all control and gave up.
Yeah.
Or how much of it he really directed, I don't know.
You know, I often wonder how many times editors are doing the real directing and second unit producers. It's because and they just slap the guy's name on because that's what was signed by obligation. Yeah, you know, Brett Ratner, Antoine Fuqua. There are these directors that have no distinguishing trademarks. They have no real distinguishable style, and you wonder. It's like, do they even direct their movies, or is it just assembly of second unit work? You know.
Yeah. And that was the thing after I took away after watching Red Dragon. The first words were, I said, that film was just empty. It had nothing to it. There was no lasting images. There was no creep factor to it. There was nothing. It was just emotionally vapid, it was.
I got the vibe maybe David Fincher turned them down because he was doing Zodiac or something.
Hmm. Possibly. I mean, one can only think what...
If they were lining up the Brinks truck to hire whoever was the hot director at the time, you know? It's like, yeah. It seems like David Fincher would be a more natural grab for that subject.
But there's no sort of screen chemistry as there is with Graham and Crawford, Dennis Farina and William Peterson in Manhunter. Their screen presence is strong together. Mm-hmm. If you look at Harvey Keitel and Edward Norton, it's just... two completely different actors, not in tune with each other, not in tune with the script.
Doesn't Keitel do his infamous, like, angry, the Tooth Fairy?
Oh, yeah.
Anything like that.
Yeah.
Don't let him in your head!
Yeah. And like I said, and you just have Philip Seymour Hoffman just, you know, heroing his way through the whole movie, and Emily Watson with a, you know, possessed, you know, Cupid doll look.
Well, these are all actors that need strong directors with a strong hand to control them, or they just do not turn in good work. Simple as that, you know.
Yeah. From what I heard, Michael Mann had first refusal for this film as well, for Red Dragon, but chose not to do it. He was like, I've already done it once. I don't need to do it again.
Yeah, why would he even need to? It's like, it's crazy. No.
Doesn't
he'd be like, please. Been there, done that, you know.
Yeah. But as I said,
he probably also knew they would appreciate his movie more once it was made.
That's not a impossibility. I'd believe that, actually. Because I tell you what, I mean, like I said, Manhunter I really liked anyway before having rewatched Red Dragon. After I watched Red Dragon, I'm like, Manhunter's a much better movie. Like, way better movie.
Yeah.
Now, what would I give Red Dragon out of 10? My first instinct was 3, and it still is. It's just... if you're not familiar with the story of Red Dragon, personally, of the three books I read of Thomas Harris's, which is Red Dragon, Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, Red Dragon's the best. It's just... I think it's a fucking masterpiece of a book. Not to say the other two books are bad, but Red Dragon's the best by a mile.
Funny thing about Thomas Harris, he's from my home state of Mississippi.
I read that, yeah. I read this from...
which I always found interesting, but it's just like, you know, I guess if you live... I think he lived in Biloxi for many years, now he lives somewhere else, but I imagine if you're living there, you've got all the time in the world to come up with the craziest shit to write about in a novel, so...
yeah.
There's nothing else to do.
He's a great author. Really, really lucky stuff. But
very scary writer.
Yeah. But if you're not familiar with it, the first port of call we say is go read the book.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant as a book. It's so dense as well. There's, like I said, I'm a third of the way through, and I've also read it once before. From what my memory was, I've read the whole book through the first time. There was not a lot of fat in it. It was pretty freaking dense and very, very detailed as well.
I'll tell you this... that book is probably the most influential paperback thriller of the last 4 decades because that spawned the whole serial killer novel phenomena. I mean, you had writers who made their entire careers just plagiarizing Thomas Harris's work, like John Sanford with his Prey novels or whatever. It's just like constant serial killer novels, like all came off of Red Dragon. That was the first one. Like, and also, they weren't called serial killers before that novel came out. They were considered random killers.
Right.
And you will watch TV shows back then, like Hunter, and they will, not our co-host, but the TV show, and they refer to a serial killer as a random killer. And but that actually spawned the entire serial killer novel genre, which was a big thing in the, you know, the heyday of the paperback thrillers of the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. All right. So, like I said, definitely go read the book. It's still in print. You can pretty much pick up anywhere. Any bookstore will have it. Next up, if you want to watch a film adaptation of it, Manhunter.
Yeah.
Go check it out. If you must watch Red Dragon, I mean, do it, but come with a warning from myself anyway. It is not a good representation of the source material at all. It's over Hollywood. Like I said, there's way too much Lecter in there compared to what he is in the book and also the film Manhunter. He's just the, you know, sort of side character, really. But, you know, by 2002, there was money in them their Lecter Hills as well. And they maximized the shit out of Anthony Hopkins with that one. And I'm going by John, probably don't watch Hannibal if you want to hear about Red Dragon, the TV show.
Yeah, I mean, I think the show has its following and everything, but I don't know if the fans of the show read the novels, or at least read Red Dragon. I think everybody eventually read Hannibal and Silence of the Lambs, but Red Dragon, I don't know. It's just like it's so different that I can't really recommend it, but it has its fans. Yeah.
What, the TV show?
Yeah, but all TV shows have cult fans.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just the way you're describing it, though, was like, it reminded me of the Bates Motel TV show, which is like, ugh.
And there's people who love that. They think it's fantastic. I don't know.
I honestly was willing to give that show a shot, and I watched the first four episodes of season one. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, okay, Mrs. Bates, from what I've read in the book by Robert Bloch, she was, you know, this sort of cranky old woman, not Vera Farmiga, who's, you know, good-looking woman. Okay, I'll buy into that. Okay, Norman Bates looks a little young, you know, 18. All right, I'll buy into that. When I saw Norman Bates with an iPod, I'm turning it off. This is...
Yeah, that sort of thing just annoys me.
I'm sorry, you don't need to bring modern technology into something that was set, well, what would have been the 1940s, I guess, the 50s.
Yeah.
For Bates Motel. You know, it's anytime you have an old property like that and they drag in technology or they drag social media into it, it's like, I'm out.
Hey, like the Bates Motel on Facebook.
Yeah. Please. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a kind of, I don't know what the phrase for it is, but we're in this culture of youth where I don't even think they'd accept anything that didn't acknowledge iPhones and Facebook and all that crap, so...
Shitbook, yeah.
Yeah. I was about to say Facebook has pretty much become a turkey shoot, so...
Yeah, it's shitbook, in my eyes. Yep. Yeah. My involvement on there, John, is so minimal these days. I said to myself, well, after I got placed in prison by that asshole, whoever you are, I got sent to Zuckerberg jail for 7 days. I said, right, from now on, if I go on it, whatever day it would be, it's absolutely 10 minutes or less and I'm out for the day. That's all I need. And
was it for the show? That would be like 5 minutes a week.
Yeah.
It'd be like 5 minutes a week. It's such a waste of time.
Well, I didn't even go on it yesterday. I was like, okay, because yesterday was Father's Day here in Australia. And, you know, I spent time with the family for the day, came home, I think I watched a football game that I recorded, and didn't even bother going on it. Just screw Zuckerberg and his cronies. So, yeah, like you said, for the show purposes only, I'll go in there and post episodes or make a quick post. But that's it. That's us talking as much Red Dragon as we possibly can. Had we finished the book, or had I finished the book, sorry, I probably could have got a bit further into it. But I'll maybe do that with a bit of a catch-up in a future episode and give my thoughts on it and give my rating out of 10. But like I said, I'm a third of the way for it so far, and yeah, it's pretty amazing. But there's also an audiobook version, unabridged, of Red Dragon out there. So if you can find that and buy that, you can listen to it. I think it's about 11 and a half hours, if I remember correctly.
Oh, wow.
So, it's a long investment. Yeah.
James Ellroy considers it the only good serial killer novel. So.
Oh, really? Yeah, well,
yeah. Other than his own, of course. But,
of course.
Yeah. He thinks it's the best pure, like, serial killer novel ever written. He thinks it's amazing, so it's a high recommendation.
He doesn't say if it's James Ellroy recommending it. Yeah, it's pretty high. All right. But yeah, that's it. Red Dragon. Check it out. Go read the book. Go listen to the audiobook. Go watch Manhunter, and that's it. Don't do nothing else with it.
Yeah. don't move into the modern world like we have. It's not worth it.
Nope. Brett Ratner's going to do you no favors. Nor is Philip Seymour Hoffman's big, dirty Sasquatch feet. Oh, my God, what a vicious sight that was.
Ah, wow. I hope I never see this movie.
Don't. Yeah. Unless you're strapped into a wheelchair like Freddie Lowndes. Yeah. Yeah, it'll actually, once you've seen Red Dragon, you want to set yourself on fire. It's that fucking bad. You want to wheel yourself down a car park in a flaming wheelchair.
Or make some Ed Norton faces, like bad acting, hammy acting faces. Yeah. He's a fucking hambone anyway.
Yeah, his face is when some fucker going to read the next line to me in my earpiece. That's his face throughout Red Dragon.
Well, it's kind of like, I had that same problem with True Detective. I thought Matthew McConaughey was hammy, and so was Woody Harrelson on that show, and everybody's acting like it was the greatest TV show of all time. I was like, really? Because there's a lot of scene chewing here. It's like, this is pretty silly. It's like, I would really be laughing at this if I were anybody else, you know? It's like, based on what I've seen and read, this is just, come on.
If you want to watch a good cop show, people, Crime Story. Check out Crime Story for sure.
Yeah.
It came and went. 2 seasons, that was it. But boy, what a great show. Jeez, I wouldn't mind doing an episode on that sometime, you know, in the future.
I got the pilot movie on VHS. Maybe we can do the pilot movie.
Oh, really? Shit.
Yeah.
No.
I have the New World Video VHS, which has the George Thorogood doing Dixie Fried, which I don't think is on the A&E version. So
does it have Dal Shannon doing Runaway at the start?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, the new version of Runaway that he did for the show, which is sounds like the old version, but it's still pretty cool.
Yeah, and then he committed suicide.
He died not long after that.
It was a comeback. It was weird. He recorded a new album and then he committed suicide. Makes no sense, but artist, man. Yeah.
Dal Shannon, what an absolute waste.
I know. What
a fantastic artist. But yeah. I say, we say, Crime Story. Definitely go check it out.
Yeah, I like Crime Story. Way better than Miami Vice, which I thought at the time when it was big.
Miami Vice, I do like. When you get episodes, though, which feature Gene Simmons and Penn Jillette in the same episode.
Yeah.
Or you've got Crockett and Tubbs being chased by Haitian zombies. You know... I can sort of pass over that a bit, but I will say
I own the complete series, and I went back and watched the first few episodes. I was actually surprised how kind of cliched and, you know, almost comic booky the scripts are.
Although Edward James Olmos is great in that show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stands there and whispers his dialogue, and it works.
Yep. I remember that one scene many times where they had Don Johnson's character cracking a jokester almost. He's just standing there, doesn't move, doesn't flinch. He's like, no. I mean, I still like Miami Vice.
I want to revisit though, where they go into the swamp and team up with these like swamp rats to attack a drug house.
Oh my
and
God.
It's like these old rednecks in the swamp. And one of them's got his gator gun. It's this big ass you know, elephant rifle. Of course, this guy gets the last shot, you know, on the bad guy at the end of the episode. But that was the first TV show to use squibs, like blood squibs.
Before that, you
did not see it on TV at the time. But that pilot movie where they had the blood squibs at the end was a total shocker when I was a kid, because you just didn't see blood like that. Yeah, because it was inspired by Scarface and all the movies that were out at the time. And so he got away with blood squibs on TV, and it was the most violent show on TV at that point.
That pilot movie is as strong as any film you'll see in this theater at that time.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was a great pilot movie. I'd say one of the best I've seen for a TV series.
Yep. And they even had a Stones song on there. They got away with that, which was like unheard of at the time.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, there's a Stones song, and the early scenes set in New York with Tubbs, trying to hunt down Calderone or whoever. And,
yeah.
You hear a Stones song on the soundtrack. It's surprising. It's on the DVD version.
And you hear Phil Collins as well, don't you? Obviously.
Yeah. It was marketed on Phil Collins.
Yeah. And you hear Russ Ballard in here as well.
But you know, this is what's so funny. That show had bad ratings the first season.
Did it really?
It was up against Dallas. So it was always like number 46 in the ratings, number 57 when that was a big deal. And that could get you canceled, but NBC rated it anyway because they invested so much in it and production facilities in Miami. And then in the summer, Dallas, I don't even think they bothered running reruns of Dallas. And so viewers turned over to Miami Vice for summer reruns because they didn't watch it. This is before VCRs were everywhere. And Miami Vice suddenly had great ratings over the summer. And I think Don Johnson was picked by People Magazine, Sexiest Man Alive. That was a big publicity boost.
Yeah.
And then viewers totally went for Miami Vice that summer. And then I think the next season, Miami Vice goes into second season, and Dallas did the whole Pam waked up from a dream and Bobby was in the shower. You know, it was the whole disastrous. The last season was all a fantasy or whatever. And it alienated viewers, so Miami Vice started killing Dallas in the ratings. And that led to the end of Dallas.
Pam Grier was in a few episodes of Miami Vice as well.
Yeah, she was. She was Tubbs' cop girlfriend or whatever.
Yep.
And that was a big deal for her at the time. Sort of like it was cool to see Pam Grier, in anything during that era.
What did you think of the film Miami Vice, done by Michael Mann?
Never saw it.
Oh, it's bad.
I couldn't accept those two actors. And I said, this is how far we've fallen. Is like these guys are picked as the leads.
Yeah, I did not like it. I really wanted to because I was such a big fan of the TV show. Yeah, I knew it was going to be different, but I knew it was Michael Mann, so I put my faith in him. But, oh, man, it was not good. I think the only film of Mann's I've really enjoyed in the last... I've not seen Public Enemies still.
Uh-huh.
I've heard it's okay. Surprisingly, the one I enjoyed the most was Collateral with Tom Cruise.
I thought that was okay.
It was a good movie.
It's all right.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was all right. I thought it was decent. I'm not a big fan of Heat like everybody else is. So
no, I don't get a boner for Heat too much. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's people who just love it. Act like it's the best crime film of the last half century. I'm like, I don't think so. I think Pacino's a ham bone in the movie, and it's obvious that he and De Niro are not in the same scenes together. It's obvious, it's all over the shoulder double edits. And,
you reckon?
I heard they couldn't stand each other, so they could not be on the set together.
Oh boy. Haven't heard that
one. It looks like a split screen effect. Everything looks like it's editing. They just don't look like they're there.
Yeah. All right, man. I think we better wind it up and go put our kimonos on and go smash some mirrors.
Yes, definitely. I'm going to feed my evil cats that are, staring me down.
Yeah. Just one thing. Look, I've got to bring up one thing. Before I forget, because I've got a bunch of notes here with me. Mm-hmm. With Manhunter, Dollarhide's profession was processing film, right? Home videos.
Yes.
Shot on 8 and 16 millimeter projectors. I'm guessing 8 millimeter projectors.
Yeah, which was
8 millimeter cameras, sorry. My mistake.
Yeah.
With Red Dragon, Dollarhide worked at a video store plant that processes videotapes. I'm sorry, when you put a videotape into your camera like you used to back in the 80s and 90s, why would you send it to a plant to get processed?
You don't.
You
just don't.
And that's... When I was watching Red Dragon, I thought, why... No, so it's a duplicating plant. Why would you need a duplicate when you got the original?
Yeah.
It just... I mean, processing film, I get it. Okay, that's how Dolahai gets to see his victims. He sees the families on the film that he processes because, as they said in Manhunter, everything goes through him. He sees everything. Mm-hmm. With Red Dragon, it makes no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all.
But this is what I'm getting at, John. No care was taken. Nothing. No care was like... Nobody even questioned, okay, we're filming this in what seems to be around about 1987. 8mm cameras, 16mm cameras were still used then. Okay, this would have been just before the advent of home video.
But they're a little bit, It...
I'm just at a loss. I can't work out the logic of thinking behind that film Red Dragon.
See, you thought about it more than the filmmakers did.
But it just makes sense. You look at it and you go, it doesn't need to be sent to a place to be processed because it's already processed in camera on a tape. Oh, nobody's even thought about it. Look, after watching the film, I got the opinion Ed Norton is like, I just want this done. I'm out of here.
Right.
I don't think Keitel even cared. I don't think none of them really cared, which tells me there was a lot of shit on the set, a lot of problems on there.
It's probably a rushed production. Just get it out. Just no attention to detail.
It's a cash in. That's all it is.
Yeah. Oh, pretty much.
And that's why if this property is to be redone, we got the film in 86. Manhunter. We got Red Dragon in 2002, so there's 16 years there. So 16 years again is next year. If we can get another adaptation of this film done by someone who knows what the fuck they're doing, I would go watch it. If someone said, hey, Stu, you want to see Red Dragon? It's coming out and it's being done by David Fincher. I would say, I want to see that. Would he do another serial killer movie? Probably not. He's done a couple before. But hypothetically, let's just use a hypothetically, all right? Or Christopher Nolan, let's say. Okay, I know, we rag on him sometimes, but truth be told, he's a good filmmaker. If they said Christopher Nolan's going to do Red Dragon, I would go see it, without a doubt. Or Mel Gibson. Right. Hey, imagine Mel Gibson's Red Dragon. That'd be fucking awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if it got put in the hands of somebody like... some music video director, boy, you'd be hard pressed to get me to watch it.
Samuel Bayer directs a dragon.
Don't. Just yeah.
Michael Bay is a red dragon.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. Yeah, the only way to make it work is to set it in the novel setting, like 1982,
81. Yeah. Yeah,
I think it's the only way to do it, and do it as a 1981 period piece, and do it accurately. Something they never seem able to do. And it's funny that they have so much trouble duplicating what was only 30, 40 years ago. They can never get that right.
You got enough reference material out there. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's not that tough to find stuff.
Not at all.
No. And if you're going to do Red Dragon again, do not cast Anthony Hopkins as Lecter. Wipe the slate clean. Get somebody else in there who can do it. You know who I'd like to see do Lecter? Gary Oldman.
Yeah, he could do it. Too bad he played the villain in one of the movies, but...
Yeah, Hannibal. Yeah.
There's probably a few other British actors I'm not thinking of right now. I could probably do it.
Fuck, bring Brian Cox back. He was good enough the first time around.
Yeah. Well, at this point, I'll be one of the train spotting guys. Because they're getting up, and it'll be Robert Carlyle.
Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor is Lecter. Johnny Lee Miller.
Oh, no. I'll tell you what, if you got Liam Neeson, I wouldn't mind seeing that as Laika?
Could possibly work, but I don't. He's a big dude. I don't picture Lecter as a big guy.
Nah. That's more Dolarhyde, isn't it? Because he's
right. Yeah, Liam Neeson would have made a good Dolarhyde 25 years ago.
Nah.
Prosthetic hair lip and everything.
Yeah, still too good looking. That's a problem.
Yeah, it's and that's a huge mistake the TV show made.
Yeah. It's a GQ dragon, isn't it?
Exactly. It's like, why would he be a serial killer? This guy would have no trouble with women. I mean, he just looks like he stepped off the cover of Esquire or GQ.
I know who we're getting the next casting of Red Dragon. We get Seth Rogen as Will Graham. Oh, God.
Like, why? Visualizing this.
He smashes the mirrors.
He knows where they buried the cat. He knew, son of a bitch.
You took your glove off and touched Mrs. Leeds, didn't you, with the powder on your hands?
Hey, you couldn't stop yourself. God, what a nightmare that would be. Hopefully that guy doesn't have much more of a career. Or James Franco. That's, of course, the guy they'll go for every quirky role.
Please. Oh, no, Johnny Depp is Will Graham. Oh, no. We got to stop this now, John. We're going to make ourselves miserable for the rest of the taping.
Oh, I know. I think he's done as an actor, so.
I can hope so.
Luckily, a lot of these guys we're making fun of, their careers are pretty much finished. Like, Ed Norton's a straight-to-DVD guy these days.
Yeah.
He'll be doing a TV show sooner or later.
Yeah. Or Ian McShane as Lecter would be good.
Yeah, actually, that's more what I would picture.
Yeah, get rid of the beard and all that stuff he had in, all the mustache he had in Deadwood, you know, clean shaven. But Ian McShane as Lecter, that wouldn't be a bad casting choice.
Yeah, totally picture that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Oh, well, that'd be a good choice.
That made us feel a bit better. And I think on that note, we better call it quits for today. And you can find us at all the usual haunts, midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com if you want to email us, if you've got any show suggestions. We're over on Shitbook. There's a page there. Okay, I'm saying it now. We had a lot of problems. I think we've managed to find the culprit who was just adding people everywhere and who wound up bringing a bunch of people who would not be sort of conducive to our group and not find what we find or what we do is amusing. Hence my 7-day ban. I think we've managed to weed that person out. If you are in the group, yes, we've said it before. I'm going to say it again. You cannot add anybody. If anybody wants to come in, they must do so on their accord. Because we've cracked down on it, we cannot guarantee everybody who wants to join will get in. It's just the way it's been. It got too... What's the word, John, I'm looking for?
Too open?
Too open. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit too open for the closed group that we are. So, yeah, the donation pack we are still working on. That will be coming. What else have I got? Midnightmoviecowboys.com. If you want to go to the website and throw a few shekels our way, if you want to donate, like I said, $15 or more will automatically get you put down for the donation pack. So there's that. Next week's show, I don't know what we're doing. We'll sort something out. But on that note, John, you want to sign off?
Agadog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app.
Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com, type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.